Ari Rosamam, here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's topic, we're going to talk about when 401k plan sponsors need to turn the lights back on. Of course, dedicated and inspired by the latest Billy Joel song. But first things first, go to that 401ksite.com for further information on all our live events. Our only Texas is like, I don't know, 6-7 weeks away. May the 3rd and on June the 7th, Yankee Stadium. Go to that 401ksite.com to sign up for all our live events. And, of course, Dallas, Arlington, I call it Dallas, but it's Arlington, Texas. Our guest is going to be Dave Valley, who is a former Mariner Ranger, current broadcast voice of the Texas Rangers. And on June the 7th, 1996 World Series hero Jim Leyritz. He was well known for hitting, I believe that was Game 4? Yes, it was Game 4 of the World Series. He doesn't get that home run. The Yankees are going to be down 3-1. They did win the series in 6. But let's go to the topic at hand. You know, I live on Long Island, and I always joke that by law I have to like Billy Joel, but, you know, answer is that I've been loving Billy Joel since I was a little kid. I remember my aunt had the my aunt and my grandmother had this turntable downstairs. They lived downstairs from us, and there was, you know, the Glass Houses album. So I've seen Billy live a couple times. Did the MSG show, which to me felt like, you know, 2.5 hours of being at Billy's house where you're sitting on the couch singing to his songs. But, you know, Billy, for about 30 years now, the River of Dreams album was pretty much his last album. I think there was the couple songs here and there, the Christmas in Fallujah, which he didn't actually record, he wrote, and then he did it himself. But Turn the Lights Back On, to me, that song speaks a lot to me. It's kind of interesting how it was done. I think there was this guy, songwriter, wanted to write with Billy, and Billy's like, I don't know about that. He gave, Billy gave this guy, what's this, Wexler, I think is the name of the kid. He's like maybe 29, 30, with all these unfinished, you know, songs that he was working on or just music. And Wexler was able to, you know, draft this song, Turn the Lights Back On. And to me, the music video is amazing just because it's all AI, deep fake, as they call it. And it's just really, really interesting how we can see Billy in 3 different stages, or actually, I think it's 4 different stages. We include current Billy in there. And it's an all-time classic video. Only wish MTV would still show videos. It's been a long time since they did that. But to me, you know, it's all that song, you know. It's all about, to me, regrets, making mistakes, and, you know, 401k plan sponsors make many mistakes. And, you know, they may have some regret in what they do. And really, this is an opportunity when they make mistakes, and we all make mistakes. And I think the most important thing about making mistakes is learning from them. How many times I've worked with organizations and they would make the same mistakes all over again, constantly. I'm currently the attorney for a not-for-profit organization, and I was joking that all the, you know, kind of dysfunction that I saw with, you know, when I was in College Republicans or the Stony Brook Statesman newspaper, or, you know, student government or synagogue or, you know, the Fakakta law firm, you would see the dysfunction, and all that dysfunction. Only, you know, I've learned from that dysfunction and how, you know, how to push things forward instead of making the same mistakes all over again. That's the purpose of this podcast, which I can't believe is episode 289, which means, you know, we're less than 3 months away to number 300. But first things first, when it comes to plan sponsors, you know, plan sponsors, they neglect the plan. It was never their intent to neglect it. You know, not paying attention to something is far different than, you know, going out and trying to destroy something. The only time I've come across a plan sponsor that intentionally did something wrong was the plan sponsor. You know, that's still assets from the plan. I mean, that's intentional. So I don't think a 401k plan sponsor from the get-go, you know, sets out to create a lousy plan. There's that line that the best laid plans of mice and men often go wrong. Plan sponsors obviously, you know, started the plan to benefit themselves as HCEs and owners, but also helping out their employees. And the problem is that, you know, they started with the best of intentions and just didn't go with the follow through. And, you know, the problem with 401k plans is when it comes to employee benefits, it really falls way behind. Health insurance, I think, is obviously number one. You know, nobody, again, I worked at a TPA, and nobody was upset about the 401k plan. And we should have been, because I don't think it was, you know, they switched platforms on us to save pricing with one of the insurance companies, which I wasn't happy about. I was the only person to speak up, because I am that turd in the punch bowl. The Larry David and me, I'm like, okay, you're switching the plan from a platform I do like, which was Fidelity, to an insurance company-based platform, which I didn't like because it was an insurance-based platform. So the employees didn't complain. The only time the employees ever complained, and I'd say it always again, is when they stopped providing the free milk for the coffee. That's when they you know, so when it comes to 401k plans, it's not high on the plan sponsors list. It's not high on the plan participants list. And, you know, health insurance, holiday bonuses, all that kind of stuff is really high on the list. You know, too many small, medium-sized businesses out there, they have, you know, somebody with a HR, they don't have someone with an HR background. I worked for a TPA. Well, I worked on site for a TPA where, you know, the boss's wife was the HR. She'd show up anytime she felt like it. And, you know, listen, if you have an HR complaint against the boss, it's kind of useless to make a complaint with the guy's wife. But, you know, again, small businesses, it's, you know, it could be the office manager, it's the, you know, or the spouse of the owner. It's rarely, like I said, there's rarely that willful intent to do things wrong. The whole point of starting a 401k plan was to recruit and retain employees. And I think plan sponsors need to turn the lights on and realize that the reason that they put the plan in place was to recruit and retain employees. I turned down jobs when I, you know, found out that it was like a year wait to be in the 401k plan. You'd find out information. You know, that Fakakta law firm, yeah, it was immediate entry and a 5% fully vested safe harbor non-elective. That was great. But had I known that the plan wasn't reviewed for 10 years and all that stuff, I might have said something from the get-go, but I didn't know. And I think it's important that plan sponsors look at plan design. You know, I always say plan designs are like suits. They need to fit. I think I've worn a suit once in the last 4 years since COVID started. This is the 4-year anniversary. I've worn a suit once, and I remember what it was for. It was to speak at a Financial Planning Association conference, I think in Connecticut. I turned down the opportunity to go to casino night for the New York Rangers and meet all my favorite Rangers just because I didn't want to wear a suit or a tuxedo or whatever it was. Maybe, you know, lose like 10, 15 pounds. Maybe I'll think again. But, you know, fact is I gained a couple of pounds, gained like 10 pounds. And, you know, I think I need to take it off before I start trying to put back on a suit. Just recently tried to put on a pair of jeans that, you know, just did not fit. So that's why I'm wearing my Vineyard Vines joggers. I might have to. We'll see what the conference is. I'm going to wear those joggers or my Vineyard Vine shorts to the conferences. I'm sorry. But I've done IRS audits, you know, wearing a polo, and that was it. I'm not wearing a suit. But plan provisions that might have been fine when the plan started may no longer be a good fit today. you know, you have a business that has a high turnover, it might be a good time to look at the service requirements for participation or employer contributions. If participation is low on the salary deferral side of the plan, you know, maybe automatic enrollment works. Whatever needs to change can only really happen the plan sponsor turns the lights back on and is no longer indifferent and looks at the plan provisions. You know, what worked when the company had 3 employees may not work when it has 12. Seen a lot of businesses, you know, escape the defined benefit route because, you know, they no longer had the needs, they no longer could afford the needs of their employees. Employee population grew exponentially. And what worked, you know, 5 years ago may not work today. I think it's really important to figure that out. And I think the plan sponsor really needs to sit down with the TPA and their risk attorney to figure out whether, you know, the plan still in operation and the plan provisions still work with the employee population now. Next, looking at plan providers, you know, even if they have plan providers working in a fiduciary capacity, they're still responsible for the mistakes caused by these plan providers. That's why, you know, it's really important for plan sponsors to review the plan providers every now and then. Plan sponsors need to make sure the plan providers are doing their jobs as promised. There's nothing worse than that surprise that they're not doing their job. I hate that. Plan errors, you know, unfortunately are, you know, again, the movie Casino, a lot of holes in the desert, and that's where the problems are buried. And that's the same way I feel about plan errors. So many times we only discover it when there's a change of the TPA or there's a government audit, and wow, there's a big, big, big problem. A lot of problems are buried in those holes, and a lot of errors are too. Obviously, reviewing the plan's administration is really, really important. It goes a long way in minimizing the potential for undiscovered errors. Unfortunately, plan sponsors only do that after the government audits them. Even if you get a government audit request, I think at that time, at the very least, you know, it's time to review the plan. And I know the IRS is doing a pilot program where they allow you to kind of correct those errors in a 90-day period before the audit and fess up and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I think is a great idea. It's important, obviously, to fix errors as they happen. Because, you know, we know with ADP tests, you know, we could always refund if we see the testing failure up front. If it's done incorrectly and we discover that they did fail it years later, plan sponsors got to, you know, go with a QNEC, which is not fun. And is obviously more cost prohibitive years later than just doing that refund. Obviously, looking at costs is a big deal. You know, I've been in my house now, it'll be 19 years this June, and the home contractor situation is not fun. Right now we're looking at like 2 small projects and, you know, getting bids and all that stuff. And we, you know, had to sue a contractor who did work before the hurricane and never came back and really did some shoddy work. They put in a, you know, they talked me into this thing where I wanted a fiberglass front door. They said, oh, wood looks great. So they put in a wood door, never bothered to seal it or whatever it was. So it was just standing out there. It was wood. And when 3 feet of water from the front door hits the front door, you get black mold. And that wasn't a lot of fun. And there's some other errors. And they just walked off the job because they wanted to have the job to fix downstairs after the hurricane. And their fees were just extremely high. And again, we had to sue them. We had no idea how expensive these guys were until we hired another contractor. You know, from the get-go, I didn't like these guys. These guys reminded me guys that I knew from Canarsie. Just, you know, young, careless guys. It was 2 brothers, and they didn't do any of the work. They had their crew. It's a family, where, you know, there's 5 different, you know, contracting companies, all with the last name. So you don't know who you're going to get, based on, they all have the same, all the contracting companies all have the same name. So they're trading off the uncle's name or whatever it was. And one of them, I'll never forget, used the N-word in my house. And I told him, I don't want to hear that word in my house. And he thought I was joking. And I'm like, I'm serious. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that word in my house. Needless to say, we got rid of them. We sued them and took a long time, whatever. But we got back a sizable settlement. But, you know, when we screw up and overpay and sue the contractor, that's on us. That's our money. When you're a plan sponsor, you don't have that luxury. You know, you're a plan fiduciary. You're responsible for the assets of all your employees. There's a duty of care. Highest duty of care in law and equity, as they say. The nature of the business really changed with fee disclosure, because I always thought it was an anomaly that a plan sponsor can only pay reasonable fees for the services provided, and yet they didn't know exactly what the costs were for the plan. I mean, I'm a big fan of index funds. I'm sorry. Always have, always will be. Most of my money is in index funds. You know, I can't beat the index really, really hard. I apologize to the folks in the actively managed world. But, you know, back then with revenue sharing, we were told that index funds were more expensive. We were told that. Plan sponsors were told that because that whole revenue sharing, which to me was kind of like a shell game of, okay, I, as a TPA, I'm going to push you to these funds. I'm going to get a sub-TA fee, and I'm not going to tell you I'm making more money. Now, again, I work for a TPA. These days I'll get in trouble for talking about this, but you know, we would switch you to a, well, you know, you had a producing TPA, we'd switch you to a different platform within the same custodian. They paid revenue sharing. We'd tell you we're cutting your fees. What we didn't tell you was we're making it more on the back end with rev share. You know, this is how it was done. And then obviously, fee disclosure regulations changed all that. It was a game changer because now the plan sponsors and plan participants can know how much is costing the plan. And, you know, they never factored into expense ratios of the mutual funds as part of the all-in expense, which I always thought was funny. Because, I mean, back in the day, I remember I was in the Kaufman Fund before Federated took it over. I'm sure that fund still exists, but, you know, back in 1991, paying 269 bips for a really, you know, well-performing fund, that goes a long way. And, you know, you pay 12B1 fees, but if you saw the Kaufman Fund and how many ads they put in Mutual Fund Magazine and everything else, you understood what you were paying for. But, you know, in terms of looking at plan costs, it's kind of easy these days. Listen, you got a 401k averages book, you pluck down $95. The idea that you have to do a whole RFP, you don't really need to do that. You know, fee disclosures and all that, they need to be treated as what they are. You don't throw it in the garbage like the bank's privacy policy statement. It's a directive for plan sponsors to figure out whether the costs are reasonable or not. And again, shelling out $95 for that 401k averages book goes a long way. You know, you don't need to go out and check all the competition and see what the pricing is and whatnot. But plan sponsors really need to understand. They got to turn the lights back on and realize whether they, you know, whether they are paying too much. And again, you don't have to pay the cheapest rate. You got to be reasonable. It's for the services provided. You want to hire 316 bells and whistles with the website. You can do that. It's on you. But it's important to, you know, figure out based on the services provided whether they're paying too much or not. Last but not least, plan sponsors need to see if they're giving the participants the tools to succeed. You know, again, participant-directed investments, I've never been a big fan of it, never will be, but that's what the business has gone to, and I can't change that. And, you know, plan participants can direct their own investments, and the idea is that it's supposed to limit the liability of plan sponsors. The problem is that under ERISA 404C, plan sponsors need to provide enough investment well, enough information for plan participants to make investment decisions. People tell me I'm wrong. I really shouldn't be pushing education and advice because that puts the plan sponsor liability. But I've worked with plans where they gave plan participants absolutely nothing. I worked, I was in a plan. HR director gave me Morningstar profiles and wished me luck. And, I can read Morningstar profiles. Most participants cannot. And, I think the selling point of, self-directed plans is flawed because plan sponsors were never aware that, they have to do something in order to get that liability protection. And doing something is more than just giving plan participants the right to direct their investments. Education's got to be out there. Plan participants need to have education enrollment meetings. They shouldn't delay, and work with a financial advisor who knows what the heck they're doing, which is really important. We've changed over the last 20 years where you had a lot of advisors who had one or two plans in books and didn't do any of the work and still got that quarterly fee. And we've changed that. We have now more experts where, you can't just dabble in the 401k space. You need to have, plans on the books and understand as a financial advisor the fiduciary responsibility of plan sponsors have, and that, it's not all about picking funds. It's all about managing the fiduciary process for a plan sponsor. And that's how I see it. And that's why the industry's gone. That's why we have ERISA 338 in that space. You had providers out there who knew what the future was going to be, and that plan sponsors may want to delegate that authority to run the fiduciary component of the plan to somebody else, somebody who has the background and the expertise to do that. So that's that with this episode of that 401k podcast. Tune in next week for another episode. Go to that 401kside.com for further information on our rents in Arlington and the Bronx, New York. Until next week, tune in. And again, tune in for another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. Thank you. Bye.